What
I
do you
used
think
to make
about?
fun of people who,
Are you
even
doing the
now,
show
and I
right
was
now?
like, no, sorry.
What? You guys ready?
I'm always ready. Hello and welcome to Breaking Geek Radio, the podcast, the premier flagship and international podcast, Bellarm Online. Thanks to Kyle for the no-look pass. We've got all the lads here to talk about some stuff and things. We're going to have a show where we discuss Tetris. We're going to put all the pieces in the right order. So fortunately, there are four of us to do that with the blocks that are in Tetris. That's a Tetris joke. Danny said that I had to make one. I'm not good at Tetris jokes. Presumably one of my jokes is copyright, but that wasn't part of the deal. He didn't say they had to be good. And so anyway, we've got that. Plus, we've got some news to talk to you guys about. Gentlemen, how are you all doing?
Great.
Doing well. I feel the need to apologize on behalf of the podcast, because I know when Nick and I had made the decision to watch Tetris instead of the incredibly popular John Wick, it was just because, like, hey, we're like, John Wick, it's an important movie, but I don't care. Like, I just do
fuck
not
you.
Care. And then all of a sudden, Jonesy comes in and is just like, "What the fuck? We're not watching John Wick. What is happening? What is this nonsense?"
And the funny thing is, like I said, I saw you all having the discussion. It was just like, I think I was sleepy or something. I was like, okay, they're just fucking around, and I went back to sleep. And then then confirmed, you know, like, no, that's what we're actually doing. Like,
in our defense, right. Tetris is, you know, defense. It's not coming out until next week. So we got the early-ish review. So
we're ahead of the curve.
We're ahead of the curve.
I don't care about.
I'm sure you don't care about it.
The second part is more important.
Uh-huh.
Ahead of the curve on a thing I don't care about. Hey, you took all your little post-its down. Does that mean you're done with your book, or are you done with that phase of writing your book?
So there was a few weeks ago, I took down the board so that we could take it with us on a retreat to write a movie. So it's actually over there. I just haven't put it back up yet.
What's your movie about?
Movie is about, you know, it's funny. So we were writing it. It was like, oh, super cool, this and that. And then I saw a trailer for Kimmy, which I never saw. And I was like, oh, it's kind of like Kimmy. So it's kind of like Kimmy. No, I didn't stop. It's very different. But in terms of like the concept, it's kind of like Kimmy a little bit.
Do I see a scene where you're just like binning the shit, like throwing it against the wall in the trash?
No, but essentially it's about this woman who is like, she's preparing for her day, da 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 da. And then at the end of it, she crawls back in, and it turns out she's living in the crawl space of her ex-boyfriend's house. And then it's about that.
Okay.
So it's basically like kind of like a thriller.
Well, it's funny, like in my head, I'm imagining like the things that you typically write. So we're going from lit RPG to like living in a crawl space.
Well, because the thing is that I kind of actually want this to get made. And I don't think a big budget fantasy is going to get made, believe it or not.
Dungeons and Dragons is right there. You never know.
Right. It only costs $140 million to make.
That's right. Somebody's
no
got
name recognition either. Like no one's ever heard of Dungeons and Dragons.
It's true.
Somebody's got a lotto, might as well be you. All right. You guys ready to talk about some news?
Yeah.
Let's talk about Tetris.
So,
Let's put that review first.
You want to do the movie review first? All right. So I'm gonna sit here and stare at you all awkwardly while you talk about Tetris. Speaking of which, Jammer, since you're leading the discussion, do you have all of the required material up?
Actually, no, I don't right now. I'll do it up in a second.
You totally said yes. I was like, hey, do you have? You're like, yup.
Well,
what did you think I was going to say?
I thought you were going to say, are you ready? And I was like, I'm ready. But then I forgot about the whole
but you're not
tomatoes
ready.
Thing. I will be ready in about 15 seconds.
Don't anticipate.
It's just vamping about you not being ready.
Anyways, so
instead, I'm going to talk about Kyle's shirt. He's got this really awesome little monster shirt on. It's pretty cool. I like that. Yeah.
All right.
I love that song. Sorry. We're on a road.
You're gone for a month and a half or so, and you become this little gremlin.
Terrorist. Little monster. It was right there.
Oh, little monster.
It was right. It was right the fuck there.
Snap.
Okay.
And the song is perfect. We're on a road to nowhere.
Just like this show at the moment.
Yeah, seriously, on the road to nowhere. So because John Wick was coming out, Nick and I decided to watch the movie Tetris, which I think is not a bad movie to watch because, you know, it's a huge Apple TV Plus release that is coming out next week, the week of the, I guess it would be the 31st or 30th. 31st. The week of the 31st, or at least the Friday of the 31st. And it really is kind of proof that, you know, Apple TV Plus is continuing to want to play, you know, the Hollywood game with these quality productions. I wouldn't call it big budget because it's not, but it's certainly a quality production. It comes from us from Marv, which is the production studio from Matthew Vaughn. Of course, it has to star Taron Egerton because I was telling Nick last night, I feel like Taron Egerton exclusively stars in Marv movies, almost with the exception of like Sing. I feel like all of them are Marv. But you know, I guess when you find someone you like to work with, you kind of stick with it. So Tetris, as of right now, has an 80% on Rotten Tomatoes based on 41 reviews. As I said before, this movie hasn't come out yet, so it hasn't had like the huge amount of reviews, plus the streaming movie, so who knows how many reviews it'll ultimately get. My guess will be about 100-ish something, but it seems to be having a pretty good start. The consensus currently is, while it's nowhere near as addictive or fast-paced as the game, Tetris offers a fun fizzy account. What's so funny? of the story behind an 8-bit classic. What the hell was that, Nick?
It was funny. I don't know. Did they have to compare it to the game?
Just the laugh was really weird.
Fuck you.
All right, fair enough.
It was very Hanna-Barbera.
So I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Nick first and say, Nick, what were your expectations going into this? And then what is your Twitter review?
At least in the final hours leading up to it, I was actually really stoked to see it. Like, I definitely wanted to see it more than John Wick because those movies, I couldn't tell you the difference between the first and the second one at all. It's like John Wick's like Mission Impossible without plot.
Just without because you plot, have brain damage. I'm sorry, what? I'm sorry. Neither John Wick nor Mission Impossible have memorable plots, but that's not what you go to see him for.
Can I finish? May I finish?
Fair enough.
I was looking forward to it a lot. I really enjoyed it. It lived up to how good I thought it would be, which, you know, it wasn't supposed to be stellar. I didn't even know it was going to be at theaters until we discussed it post show last week.
It was like it lived up to what it was supposed to be. It wasn't supposed to be stellar. What does that mean, Nick?
It's not a movie that I went to expecting to see an A plus.
Okay, how come?
Is it an A plus?
No, it lived up to expectations, not surpassed. I already said lived up to expectations, but it was a very enjoyable tale of getting Tetris to the United States, all the crazy rights issues, and also just kind of that almost both the comedy and the thriller aspect having to do with being in the USSR as an American during that time.
Chandler, do you mind if I jump in here?
Sure.
Do you mind if I interrogate the witness? Sure. Nick Dahl, what experience, if any, do you have with Tetris, the game, not the film?
You
did not say that, Nick. About your experience with the game. It's completely different.
I didn't hear that. I love the game. It's my first game I ever owned.
On an original Game Boy or just like?
On original Game Boy.
Nice.
I played Mario before on Nintendo. My first system I owned was a Game Boy.
Okay, groovy. Okay, thank you. Thank you. Jammer, you witness.
I'm not a witness. I don't have any.
I questioned him. No, I questioned him, and then I turned him back over to you so you could further question him.
Oh, okay. Okay, good job. Good job. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
You really, I don't lawyer, bro, but here we go.
But you have seen a movie.
Yeah, but I don't see law movies that much. I should see more of them. Nick. So you mentioned that you weren't expecting much. What does that mean?
I already answered that.
You really didn't, though. You just said...
Asked and answered.
See? Sustained.
Okay. All right, you know, okay, fine. What do you rate it? Give me your rating. God damn it, Jonesy.
C plus.
C plus. Wow, that's really low. Why C plus? Why not higher?
Well, I
like on the Nick Doll scale, that's basically an F.
Well, I was trying to be more realistic. Like, I don't want to give everything a B minus, which is what I was also leaning towards.
That no,
why
but you
start
can
now?
Yeah, you have no problem giving everything an A plus. Why are you starting now?
I don't give A pluses very often.
How many?
Don't
did you
question
give last
how
year?
I rate shit.
You're kind of an A plus slut.
Yeah, I enjoy shit. Just living life, enjoying movies. Like,
you're like, I enjoy shit, but I want to make sure that I'm not giving too many B minuses
like,
out.
A like list is different than rating something, isn't it? I mean, I like trash. I'm wearing trash with the little monsters. That movie's got all the nostalgia and great feels in the world, but it is not a well done movie.
It depends on how you're rating it, though, because your rating could be based on your enjoyment, or it could be based on you trying to be more objective about how you do what you're bringing to the table. But it kind of depends. So okay, Nick, you gave it a C+. All right, Tetris. So it's funny, like with regards to maybe what he was saying earlier, it's like I wasn't expecting an A+ movie. It was a movie that I remember watching the trailer for the first time. And being for the first 30 seconds, it felt like an SNL skit, just like the way the trailer was, where he's just sitting there. He's like, I see blocks in my sleep. It's the perfect game. And, you know, the way he was talking. And it seemed like very much one of those movies where, oh, or one of those trailers where it's just like, we're just going to, you know, make it super extreme and over the top and just ridiculous. Kind of like almost like Weird. If you remember that movie, The Weird, I didn't see the movie, but the trailer. Weird, the Al Yankovic story with Daniel Craig, when it was almost like it was making fun of those types of movies more than it was actually being one of those types of movies. And I wasn't quite sure what they were going to do with it. I will say the movie is a lot of fun for sure. Like it was very entertaining from beginning to end. Like I wasn't bored, and nor did it actually seem as over the top as the trailer seem to make it out to be, because I know the trailer there are parts of it where I was concerned. I was like, is this going to be like based on a true story, but wink wink, not really. What is understated in this one is literally how much of this movie is just guys in meeting rooms. So much of this movie, like probably about 80% of this movie, is guys in meeting rooms making deals. And it's not until maybe the third act climax where I'm like, okay, that probably didn't happen. But I was surprised up till that point how much of it felt like, okay, that could have happened. That could have happened. And it didn't seem as ridiculous and extreme as the trailer seemed to make it out to be. So yeah, if you're someone who likes movies, you know, who about businesses, yes, or about dealings, or if maybe, you know, you saw the movie for the trailer for the movie Air and you're like, that looks good, I think this might be right up your alley. It's very much along the same lines of that. And it has one refreshing aspect when it comes to these business movies. Like if you look at something like The Social Network or Steve Jobs or The Founders or anything having to do with a business, usually you're following a living, breathing human piece of shit as the lead character. And the lead character in this one is actually like a decent human being who's actually trying to do stuff right. And that part is refreshing. But on the flip side of that, this movie is actually produced by the lead of the movie, not Taron Egerton, but the character that he plays, so the person, as well as the creator of Tetris. And it also makes me feel like, how much propaganda is this shit? So it's like, don't think about it too hard. I think it's still a lot of fun. And certainly worth seeing if you're remotely interested in the story of Tetris. Also, if you're interested in the story of Tetris, there's a great YouTube video. Kyle knows what I'm talking about. The Gaming Historian is a YouTuber. He did like an hour plus long video about this story. And it's awesome. He has great production value.
How does that match up, Jammer?
I don't remember because I watched it like a year and a half ago. So I don't remember, but I'm certainly going to go back and rewatch it now that I've watched this movie. And kind of see.
Based on what you were just saying. Based on what you were just saying about it being based on a true story, wink, wink, and the guy being the producer and stuff. But this YouTuber that you've just mentioned, it sounds like he's impartial and is actually
right,
just relaying the facts of it. So it, yes, would be great if they matched up like that. Sorry, Carl, you were about to say whether or not it matched up or not, buddy?
Since Jammer said he hadn't seen it in a while, I was just going to say that from everything that, because I haven't seen Tetris yet, of course, it's not out for streaming, but from what I've read on the movie and, of course, from what you've seen, there's exaggeration to be expected, but a lot of it seems on point.
Good.
So, yeah.
Good. Because yeah. I've recently found out that Bohemian Rhapsody was, I mean, obviously there's always a little bit of artistic license,
highly embellished, but
Rhapsody story was absolute bullshit, and I was a little bit disappointed by that, because I'm not saying it was all good, everything was going to be factual on screen, but the way the band met, I thought they would at least show that as the true story, and apparently the way it was in the movie was not even like that. So major events, I was kind of hoping that they would follow, but it was way out, that movie. Now, I was disappointed because I found that out recently. Going in from what you just said with Tetris, if I go in knowing that it's going to be slightly embellished, I'm okay with that, because I like the look of the trailer. So that's why the trailer, as I go in, my eyes open, I'm absolutely fine.
The trailer felt like it would be super embellished. So it was actually ended up being less embellished, at least seeming less embellished. I don't know the facts.
The trailer was
yet.
Quite stylized, wasn't it? With the fast-paced action and jumping. But it looked like it was going to be this race against time to get him out of Russia and the game out of Russia before the KGB killed him and his family in a nuclear explosion somewhere or some mission.
So it is fast-paced, but that part of him trying to race out of Russia literally isn't until like the last 15 to 20 minutes.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And the rest is men in boardrooms talking. And
with quick
like,
cuts and fun.
It's very fast. It is fast paced. It's like a lot of back and forth stuff. It has that stylized that part where when they have some establishing shots, they kind of have that sort of 8-bit pixel sort of veneer like over it, like, which is completely unnecessary. Honestly, it was kind of more distracting than it was anything. But overall, I had a good time watching it. Like, really, I had an amazing time watching it. It was also refreshing to see a movie in theaters that wasn't an action movie. So cool. I was like, oh, I forgot what this feels like.
And all the right, score does work in the Tetris theme a lot.
Yes.
Which is what I was hoping
for. So, Jammer, what's your letter grade?
My letter grade is a B. I think my main issues with it, my main issues stem from... What are my main issues with it?
So, are you saying that this film has broken the video game adaptation curse? Is that what you're saying? Is that what I'm hearing right now?
Up until this point, there hasn't been a single project worth seeing until Tetris. Who knew that Tetris would be the one to break the curse?
Amazing.
Yeah.
No way Mario can be this good.
No way Mario can be this good. Actually, stay behind, stay at the very end for the post-credit scene, because it connects it to the Mario movie. So. Mm-hmm.
So what you're saying is,
I'm obviously
Game Boy
kidding,
Cinematic
Danny.
Universe. Game Boy Cinematic Universe. Yeah, that's what I want.
They also do show Super
the
Mario
Nintendo
Land 1.
Multiverse.
So one thing that was really distracting in this movie, though, if you're like me and if you've played Super Mario Land a million times, you actually do see him play Super Mario Land on the Game Boy in its prototype version. So if this is a deep cut, if y'all remember the score for that, dun 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 dun. So the way they do it is there's as he's playing it goes, which is the death thing when he dies. They have that part playing, and then kind of going back to the main part of the score while he's consistently not dying. So that's weird. I don't know why they did that. I don't know who was in charge of the music mixing in that particular scene, but distracting as fuck for me. So actually, I changed my grade. It's an F.
Moving on to the news.
That was your main issue with the movie, the Mario music.
It's going to be on Apple TV Plus for free for everyone who has Apple TV Plus. So no reason not to watch it.
March 31st. Once again, if you, like I said, if you like these types of business movies, definitely worth seeing. It has a little bit more of a high octane energy to it, super fast paced, got a little bit of stylization, but it's still very much a business movie. It's not like a parody of one like it may have come across as in the trailer. Great performance by Taron Egerton. He's pulling off that Doctor Strange style American accent where you kind of over enunciate everything when you talk, and it's a little bit distracting when you do it. That's still good. Still good. So I'm done. I have nothing more to say, unless anyone else has further questions about Tetris the movie.
No more questions.
Is it better or worse than Pixels?
I never watched Pixels.
What?
Gotta be better than that.
Same.
I'm sure it's better.
I'm assuming it is.
Yep.
Have you seen it, Jonesy?
Pixels?
Mm-hmm.
God, no.
It's shit.
I only see Adam Sandler movies when I lose bets.
To be fair, I'm actually looking forward to Murder Mystery 2 because I liked Murder Mystery 1. So. I like Murder Mystery movies, Nick.
All right. That's it?
What's news, Jonesy?
We got some news. All right. So we're just going to speed through this episode. All right, cool. So apparently we've got a shakeup in the Star Wars filmography. We've got some new stuff happening.
Disturbance in the Force.
Oh, yeah. I like that. There's been a disturbance in the Force. So we've got a reporting from Variety that Peaky Blinders creator Steven Knight is set to write the screenplay for the untitled Star Wars movie by Shermin Obaid Chinoy, who's directing Miss Marvel. And this was originally going to be written by Damon Lindelof and Justin Britt Gibson, but they've departed the project. I'm curious what you guys think about this. Like, these kinds of things happen all the time. I think I'm sad to lose Damon Lindelof, given what we've seen from The Watchmen. But I think beyond that, I'm not too bothered by this. What do you guys think?
I mean, who's left at Star Wars? Like, you have Taika Waititi, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Shermin Obaid Chinoy. That's it, right? Of all the movies that we know about, those are the only two that are left at this
point. Well, the other one they haven't officially canceled. The other one they haven't officially canceled is Rian Johnson's. But we also haven't heard anything about that in a long time.
That's not going anywhere. As much as I love Rian Johnson, and actually, it would be, I would roll in the news if it were to come out and be like, Rian Johnson is leading Lucasfilm. I would just be like, oh yeah.
Oh.
Yes. Rolling around in the news.
Put out some newsprint.
Oh yeah, put out some newsprints, lay it out. That would be me. But yeah, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, so what I think is interesting about this, right, the film hasn't been canceled, and that's usually the thing we've been pretty critical of lately. This, to me, seems relatively standard, right? Just a little changing of who's going to be doing this and that.
The film is still moving forward. It would be more normal if the screenwriters weren't so high profile.
Sure. Yeah, I agree with that.
I think that's the big part of it, is because unfortunately, Shermin Obaid Chinoy, it was never considered the Shermin Obaid Chinoy movie. It was the Damon Lindelof movie for us,
because
we know who he is. And he's now gone from that. So maybe it is standard protocol in Hollywood, but when that person is like, the fact that the person who is the high ticket item person is now gone is very much like, well, what else is new at Lucasfilm? You know? They've lost Patty Jenkins. They've lost Phil Lord, Chris Miller. They've lost basically Gareth Edwards, right? That's the right Gareth, right? Gareth Edwards. They've lost. Who else did they lose? They've lost a million.
So I would say this. As you're naming those people, I think that there are two different tracks, right? There are people fired track, and then there are people who have like turned in a project, and then it's like, no, we don't.
It's all the same.
People who have. To me, I think it's different, right?
Because if I walk away for, I get what you're saying, but like, to me, what it shows is that there's a lack of alignment between what Lucasfilm wants and what their directors are delivering, regardless of whether or not they're fired or they decide to leave. Either way, there's a misalignment that should have been ironed out beforehand.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that part. I think it's all symptomatic of the same thing, which is shit leadership.
Yep.
But I do think that there is a difference between I've left the project for creative reasons and I've been fired, right? And at a baseline, and this is not to just jump on that bandwagon again, but when you talk about Patty Jenkins and leadership style, how is it that you've said, okay, this is the project that I want? Someone substantially delivers you the project that presumably you've talked about, and then they're like, no. And then you have to bring in Ron Howard to like, make something different than what existed. That to me is just a problem in leadership, not the people who were doing the task.
Agreed. Yeah.
And so this is a different kind of symptom of the same thing.
Yeah.
Bad leadership.
Yeah, exactly. It continues to kind of show that they don't know what they want or what they're wanting to do, which is unfortunate. And, you know, it was a problem that I, you know, personally, you know me, I thought it was actually kind of cool with Star Wars, the sequel trilogy was coming out when it became clear with the second movie that they didn't have a plan. And I'm like, the idea that you can actually come in and have like people with very creative different visions that really help turn things into it, like actually lean into
killing Danny
of a filmmaker would be really cool. And it helps differentiate it from maybe something like Marvel, which is more on the rails, so to speak. It helps. It's a nice counterpoint, a different way to run a studio. But then you're making shit things. It doesn't help. Like when it turns into The Rise of Skywalker and then you get really insecure. It was really bizarre last week or the week before when Iger talked about how they were really put off by, or they were really like surprised by Solo. And I'm like, that was like 2018. That was like 4 years ago. That was so long ago. Like, that's not new information. Like, why are you still reacting so heavily to that? Like, the landscape has changed so much since then. It felt odd to me.
Not only that, but on Iger, do people not remember he was the one in charge that wanted one Star Wars movie a year, every year after the, you know, starting the sequel trilogy, Star Wars story between saga films. And he was the one that was pushing for a lot of this. Like, I think a lot of people feel just what was going on with Chapek, and they kind of forget how much, especially with Star Wars, and maybe not as much with Marvel. That was mostly Chapek's fault for pushing pushing Disney Plus so hard.
Let's call him Chappy.
What do you think about that, guys? To anyone, and Danny, haven't heard from you in a minute, but what do you think about bringing the guy that's kind of like at fault for some of the watering down and pushing of Star Wars so hard? What do you think?
Well, me on that. Well, I'm just a quick defer from that.
Now he is frozen.
Danny's freezing.
Do you think it's down to the current financial challenge that Disney had about saving some money? Because there's a chance that Lindelof's script, his version of what was happening was going to be obviously these are going to be big budget movies, but maybe some of this was so big that they needed to just cut it down a little bit. And so rather than kind of change his script completely, they've just come in a whole new tack. So because there is a lot of budgetary concerns at Disney at the moment with every the cutback, plus I know we're about to talk about the other story concerning, well, I can't remember, possibly the current loss of a producer over at Marvel because of the challenges with special effects, etc. So how much of this do you think is money driven and not necessarily anything to do with the quality of the script or the type of story or anything that's coming in?
I think movie-wise, has nothing to do with the budget. Disney Plus-wise, I feel like they're trying to watch the budgets more because it's not been connected, profitable.
Though? Is this not all under the House of Mouse?
I don't know, but the movies, I feel like Disney will throw lots of money at anything. And enough of their other stuff that's sticking, it doesn't even hurt when they have a flop. Like, it's like Avatar will carry the studio into the future.
But I don't know about that.
Especially with Star Wars.
I think they're a lot more careful about their budgets than you're giving it credit for, but
you're never going to make a Star Wars movie less than $150 million.
Yeah, I don't know. There's no evidence, at least, that you think like, oh, this is too expensive. This is $250. We need it down to $200. There's no evidence that is going to be the case. I think they're probably just gun shy about what is going to be put out there after you've had two not so well-received movies. Some would say three. But, you know, The Last Jedi was the best Star Wars movie ever made.
Well, I saw a good tweet and I liked it where someone's like, yeah, no one wants to touch Star Wars because if you touch Star Wars, suddenly half the geeks on the internet hate your guts because you didn't give them exactly what they wanted.
Make a good movie.
Rian Johnson did.
They did Last Jedi.
So here's the thing. Even if that was the best of them, it's still sandwiched between like a movie that's fine and a movie that's complete shit. And so if you take them
as
Force Awakens was fun. I enjoyed that movie.
I said fine. Like it just doesn't, it doesn't.
I think it's more than fine, but
taken as a whole, right? It is one story. By the time you get to the end, and that drags it down. If there are arcs and things that they set up in that first film that don't carry through to the end, it is necessarily dragged down by that complete project.
Yeah, the last movie spoils the trilogy so much that I hate the sequel trilogy. I didn't hate it until the third movie.
Yeah. I don't hate it.
I like it.
It has just become fine.
The Last Jedi ended in such a way where I'm like, it ends there. It ends
there. That's
what I like
to say. But
it didn't. That's the thing.
No,
it didn't.
It did. But in my head, it did. That's okay.
And they knew it didn't. They knew there was a third one that was the Skywalker fucking nineology, whatever it's called. Anyway, we're going to go off track here.
So I was going to say, yeah, here's the thing. Before we rehash an argument from several years ago,
2017,
we're going to go back and, well, so there are two different arguments, right? There are endings matter, and then there's like, do you need a plan? We're going to move on to talk about the firing.
The answer is no, you don't need a plan. You just need to make a movie that pays off everything.
It's not true.
You need to be able to pay things off effectively.
It's not true. Listen,
you're just falling into the same conversation we were going to skip.
If you're going to go on if you're going to go on a vacation, and it's just you, and it's okay to not have a plan, right? If you are in charge of millions of dollars and producing several projects related to those, you need a plan.
You don't need a plan for the whole
you
thing.
You do.
You need a plan for each one as you go.
But
I'm just
it's
saying.
It's a scale. It's a scale.
Don't get me wrong.
The bigger up in scale you go,
don't get me wrong. I agree with you. Lucasfilm did not stick the landing, but it is not necessary to have a plan in order to be successful. It is not a necessity.
It depends on what you're talking about.
It is not necessary.
You're just going on a vacation.
Hold on.
By
it is not.
Right.
It is not necessary to be able to say like, we're gonna have three movies. I need a plan for 1, 2, and 3 before I continue. No, you don't. You get a plan for 1, and then you get a plan for 2, and then you get a plan for 3. That's
you
could be successful. It is possible to be successful that way.
But it depends on how you're making them.
Let Danny speak.
Yeah, if you know that you're gonna make a trilogy, then you need a plan.
I don't agree.
Jammer now has to write an entire trilogy, right? But he cannot think of the ending at all whatsoever.
That's not
as a matter,
exact,
as a matter of fact, Jonesy, here's what you do. You come up with an ending, Jonesy, an ending in your mind. Jammer has to start it, and you don't give him any of the plan, but he has to take your ending regardless. And Nick, you come up with the premise for the second one. That way it'll keep it fair. Jammer writes them all. He only knows just the first one. That's it. That's all he knows. Jonesy holds the key to the end. Nick holds the key to the middle. Jammer has to write
wild card, bitches.
As a storyteller, you should be able to pivot on what came before, and J.J. Abrams failed at that because he tried to just circle it back in a way that made no sense.
Hey, I said they should lean into
9 films.
They should have leaned into 8.
A story that's 9 films long. That's an impossible task. You're playing
for that.
Ryan Johnson
it's
did.
Not an impossible task.
It's not an impossible task. He could have done it. I could have done
it. He could have done
it. Fuck you. I could have done it.
But you know what you have to do it? You got a plan for it.
Have a plan.
Moving on. Moving on.
I love it when a plan comes together.
So I'm going to punt this one because I feel like I've read the Variety story, but I'm not sure I understand it well enough to speak intelligently on it. So I'll introduce it, and Jammer, if you don't mind taking like the substantive elements of it. So Victoria Alonso, who is a longtime Marvel producer, has been released by the studio. You would have seen her name on films as far back as the first Avengers film. And there was a big kerfuffle
as far back
at the
as
studio.
Iron Man before Iron Man.
Oh yeah. Iron Man. Yeah. And so there's been a big kerfuffle at the studio, and Jammer, I'm going to turn it over to you to handle this.
Yeah. So Alonso, as he mentioned, has been there for many years. Earlier this week, it was reported that she was gone from Marvel. At the time, it wasn't clear whether or not she left of her own volition or if she was let go. This Variety article talks about how she was terminated, dismissed from Disney. They said the cause of her termination is unclear. The decision was made by a consortium including Human Resources, Disney's legal department, and multiple execs, including Disney Entertainment co-chairman Alan Bergman, to whom all the Marvel Studios reports. Alonso's longtime boss and Marvel chief creative officer Kevin Feige felt mired in an impossible situation and ultimately did not intervene, one source added. Alonso was blindsided, another insider added. She declined for comment. And yeah, it's it's a big deal. Like I said, she's been with the studio for 17 plus years from since.
So give me the so what? Give me the so what? Like, why does this matter?
This matter. Well, she's, first of all, it's always a big deal when someone isn't just, they don't just leave, they're fired. Not just somebody, but a big piece of like the big heavy hitter producer puzzle over at Marvel Studios. She's like, she's been moving doing this for so long. She's obviously very skilled and talented, has been able to get it done. And she's like the only other name that I could think other than Feige that's as big as Luis Desposito. That's it. Her and Luis Desposito and Kevin Feige. Those are the three producers I think about whenever I think about Marvel Studios. So that, was that three? Triangle of happiness there is now down to two. It's now a one-legged pony. That's a weird analogy. But it's now
it's
a
now
one-legged
a straight line, not a triangle.
It's now a straight line. And I think that's a big deal, especially when she's fired. And we can look at the current state of the MCU, and it's hard not to speculate what is the reason behind this. You know, people aren't huge fans of Phase 4. They haven't liked how Phase 5 started with Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania. And last year, or 7 or 8 months ago, whenever that was, there was that huge issue that bubbled over a little bit, but then, you know, quickly went back under, having to do with visual effects and how much they really pushed those visual effects artists. We don't know if it has anything to do with that. I do think it's worth noting that I don't believe that Alonso or Luis Desposito are producers that have a hand in the creativity or the creative arc surrounding the movies, but are more the people that you kind of say like, okay, here's what we're doing. And they're like, okay, I'm going to take care of it. I'm going to hire the people. I'm going to break this down to make sure we're on budget, da, 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 those types of producers. And so what is it that she could have done, or what is it about the political atmosphere at Marvel Studios that made her firing a quote unquote necessity? So, I mean, it opens up a lot of questions.
So can I add one layer to what you're talking about? So Chris Lee from The Vulture, he tweeted something that's relevant to one of the things you talked about with regard to VFX. His tweet was that so many VFX sources have told me that Victoria Alonso was singularly responsible for Marvel's toxic work environment, a kingmaker who rewarded unquestioning fealty with an avalanche of work, but who also maintained the blacklist that kept FX pros wild-eyed with fear.
Well, if that's true, that's great. You know, that's
that fantastic. She was fired?
Yeah. Because you don't want somebody who's not just toxic, but just like really just not just within Marvel Studios, but within the entire VFX community, creates such a toxic environment and ruins so many lives. That's not great. I mean, on one side, you can argue it's because of someone like her that these movies get done on time, on budget. But the negative side is, you have a lot of visual effects snafus, a lot of things that look bad, and you have lives ruined because they have to get things done on time and on budget. So it's a double-edged sword for sure. And it actually makes me, if this is true, it makes me a little bit disappointed in Kevin Feige that he didn't actually take this and handle
more
it himself.
Seriously,
granted, he's a one man, and you know, he's in a, as they mentioned, mired in an impossible situation. So who knows what that situation entailed.
So to add a further layer to that, another part of that is allegedly she held a crazy amount of power, big footing all major creative decisions on Marvel movies and shows. This is a quote. Kevin Feige and Victoria Alonso personally approved every single shot, all the visual effects work, which is usually the job of a director or showrunner. So that is a quote from tech that spoke again to Chris Lee from Vulture. So it sounds like the easiest analogy that I can make in the military, there's this culture of it doesn't matter how you get the job done. So people who are toxic will continue to get promoted as long as they produce. And so to your point about people not being happy about this last phase and some of the projects that have been coming out, she's been producing. And so Kevin Feige and her have been right alongside each other, producing and doing well. And now that that's no longer the case, that toxicity, there's a price for that.
Yeah, Yeah, it's like there's never like, what was it? You don't hear about the bad stuff until you start losing. And then all of a sudden like, oh, well, let's take a look and see what the problem is. Because now you don't have that veneer of success to hide behind.
Yep.
Sounds like Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Sounds to me like they've certainly, they've found the bad apple. They found the bad apple in the barrel and a little bit of the, well, now we can kind of, from what you were just saying there, Jonesy, about actually having creative input as well, not just getting shit done, making sure that things were happening, but actually overseeing all of the VFX shots and the decisions being made. That sounds to me like micromanagement at its worst when it comes to these kind of films. And we've started to see that, you know, for phase four, the reason why I've not been enjoying phase four has nothing to do with the quality of the visual effects. So if she's actually having creative input on story and stuff as well, then maybe they've had a look at that and said, look, you now you're getting too involved. You should have been the person just making sure that the shit was done. It sounds very much like she was possibly the cause of some disruptions across the whole filmmaking process, from VFX to director to story. You just said showrunner as well. And so, yeah, it sounds like she may have needed to go if what this guy is saying, if what all this adds up is true.
And I will say, as far as like the, what were you saying? Marvel Studios has always been unique in that it's always seemed like a very producer centric studio. So I don't even know if like that's, you know, them finalizing the shots or approving them is like, has that been the case since Iron Man? Like, I mean, it's a situation where, well, now that things aren't looking that good or think people aren't liking them as much, now let's take a look. Like, oh, that's not normal. Like, but maybe it's been normal for the past 17 years. So maybe they were just working on too much shit. I mean, we've talked about this before. They have too much stuff that they're just working on, and it's just it's a quality control issue at this point.
Yeah. Yep.
Nick, you have anything to add or to say or any opinions?
No, you guys got it. You covered it.
Other extra bits of insight, Jonesy, on your end? Those are some good little nuggets that you threw in.
I got nothing.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see what happens from here, because it's like they're cutting back a little bit. They are probably going to have to hire a new head producer or big producer to continue the job forward, and hopefully they're able to make things right. I'm not convinced that she alone was responsible for everything. Maybe she was in terms of perceived, but I mean, the problem is industry wide, it's bigger than her. So I don't know how they go about fixing that issue without just overhauling the entire process, but maybe I'm just cynical. It's a systemic issue in the industry.
No, I'm something. So something the last links- thing,
sorry, Jonathan, I was going to say something that links both this story and what we were just discussing at the end of the other one. One of the VFX guys in another article that I read was saying that Marvel were coming in and they don't seem to have a plan. They were even saying that they were changing VFX shots at the last minute because they were changing the powers that some superheroes in these movies were having. And they were saying, and the quote was, not quite verbatim, I apologize, I can't find it, was that they need to have a plan because they keep changing their mind about stuff. Now, I'm not saying that they don't have a plan for phase four, but if they're that, you know, if they can't decide on what powers a superhero has at this fucking point, then, oh my God, come on, guys, that's got to be something to it. And maybe this was where she was being involved a little bit as well, just on those VFX shots.
So the addendum to that story is part of the way Marvel has been recruiting directors. And so they've had directors who work on smaller projects and bring them into these huge projects, and they don't know how to work with these VFX. And so because they don't know how to do that, there is this idea that it's easier to do it in post. And where there was a period of time where you would do all of this shooting ahead of on the day of, on time, and all this other stuff. These are the kinds of things that are affecting the budget. And all of this stuff is leading to that VFX crunch, where you would normally do this stuff, you know, whatever you could practically, and then do some VFX work on the back end. There are these people who are inexperienced doing these big budget movies and not understanding, like, okay, well, that doesn't look like what I envisioned. It's like, yeah, we're just giving you like this little bit so that you can continue making the movie, and then we're going to finish it. but they basically have to render almost an entire scene so these inexperienced directors can see what they think they're supposed to be seeing. I forgot where I read that, but that's part of this struggle. Yep. And that's part of what's creating a lot of this crunch between the VFX people and the quality of the movies. Like, it's all related, and it's all related to not having a fucking plan. Can we move
on? Or not having experience either. It's industry-wide. It's industry-wide because these filmmakers no longer have mid-budget movies to cut their teeth on. They go straight from $5 million movies to $150 million movies, as opposed to like going from that to a $30 million movie, then to a $50 million movie, then to a $70 million movie, and then finally a $150 million movie. There's no stepping stone. It's straight from boom to like the biggest movie in the world. So they have that infrastructure set up so they can hire these creative folks who don't have the experience they need and surround them with people who can handle the effects, but also just make it easier so they don't have to worry about planning as much the day of. But anyways, I think we're good to get going on the next story. Anyone else have anything to add?
No.
All right, Jonesy, you're up.
All right, we're moving on. So we've got a story. We've got some Shazam post-mortem news to talk about. And there are approximately three, I guess I would call them allegations in this story. So there's a discussion where Zachary Levi is kind of talking about what could have made the movie better and or what could have made it do well. And so one of his contentions is that, you know, we've got the perfect family film and no one went to see it. And he thinks that this Discovery Plus merger is responsible for some of the bad marketing that, or what he perceives as bad marketing for the film. One of the other allegations is that Dwayne The Rock Johnson has basically cock-blocked some of this stuff with cameos and appearances in certain films.
Rock blocked.
Thank you, Nick.
Only reason
so he's just he was responsible for, you know, not wanting to be in the Shazam film or not having Shazam in his film, which they thought was a hindrance. And I forgot what the other allegation was.
No, that was it. That was basically there was a report that indicated that The Rock was he was responsible to for that post-credit scene, right? Of not allowing the Justice Society be there. And at the last minute, they had to scramble and get Economus and Harcourt in as a replacement. And I think there was this potential hint there that, that wasn't responsible for. I think that was definitely an indication of The Rock kind of being an asshole, to be perfectly honest. But I don't think that's responsible for Shazam failing. Yeah. As much as it is evidence of just sort of like behind the scenes clashing that, of course, doesn't do anything for anyone.
Yeah. And what the director said was that the scene fell apart 3 days before they were going to roll cameras, forcing him to find alternate characters at the last minute. And that was due to Johnson's blocking the Justice Society from appearing in the film.
Which, you know, that sucks. That's awful. He shouldn't have done that. That's stupid. I hate everything about that. But it's not why Shazam flopped. I was watching this. I mentioned this last week in my solo review of Shazam Fury of the Gods. And in that solo review of Shazam Fury of the Gods, I did mention that I think this movie's really fun. I really like it. I think it's fun. I don't think you need to see it in theaters. Like, I just don't think you need to see it in theaters. And like, I felt bad saying that because I'm like, is it a good movie? Yes. Is it a good family movie? I think so. I think families would enjoy seeing it. Would I recommend them see it in theaters? No, you can wait. It's like,
you know, what's funny? That's true of the entire Shazam trilogy.
There's no
Black Adam, and this one.
I like the first Shazam. I think the first Shazam is fun to see in theaters.
No, no, no.
Nah.
All right, fair enough. I'm not going to argue. I don't feel that passionately about it.
And Black Adam is straight trash. Danny
Black Adam,
I did wait to see it at home, and I saw it. I was like, this movie's a lot more fun than I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be a dumpster fire, and I was like, I'm having a good time.
It
is a
dumpster
fire.
It's not good.
It's not good.
I'm not going to say it's good, but I had a good time.
Society movie with a terrible villain.
I like the Justice Society stuff a lot. Like, I liked all of their stuff in there.
Give me more Hawkman.
Yeah. I would have preferred this to be a Justice Society movie than a Black Adam movie.
You know what's funny? Because I didn't know anything about Dr. Fate. So the whole movie, I was just waiting for Dr. Fate to turn into the bad guy because I thought he was the villain of the movie. And I was like, what's happening? He hasn't turned yet. And then he dies.
You know what
I'm
it
like,
was?
Oh,
it was the
I
British accent.
The bad guy.
Danny.
Star Wars rules.
So yeah, I you know what's funny? We've talked about The Rock. People have had issues with The Rock, and I did not find what he's doing to be that crazy. Only from this perspective, if you look up the things that people of his caliber do, this is par for the course, right? Tom Cruise literally withheld a movie from dropping in theaters until COVID was over. I know that. Like Julia Roberts is like, I need 4 gallons of Evian for every film that I'm on. George Clooney, he was in Gravity. And I think, how long was he in Gravity? Somebody guess. Like
20 minutes, 15 minutes.
Less.
All right. No. So he demanded that he have a basketball court, a garden, and there was one other thing for his trailer. I was like, this is just who these people are. And I find it to be fascinating where people are like, oh, The Rock is this and The Rock is that. So I'll tie it back to the first thing that we discussed. As long as you're producing, it's okay to be a complete cunt in Hollywood, right? Because no one cares. As long as you're making people money, it's okay. And these shitty things that you do get buried. But once you start causing a crunch in the VFX studios and you're no longer making money or you're not being as acclaimed as you were before, those things are going to come out. When Shazam flops and, you know, you've been a dick to other movies because of that, this stuff is going to come out. You know, it's interesting to me, and I kind of wonder, what, if anything, did The Rock have to do with the feud between him and Vin Diesel, right? And so now you kind of go back to stuff like that and you're like, was that 100% Vin Diesel?
That's what I thought.
And I feel like the answer has to be no. And so this is, I find it to be fascinating. Yeah, big just huge egos. And like I said, these are just the crowds in which they roll. So I agree with you, Jammer, that this is, I don't like it, but it is also par for the course.
Yeah, that's fair. And I don't think whatever The Rock did, it did not affect the box office of Shazam Fury of the Gods. Sorry to say that, but I think it has everything to do. I think it does have to do with the marketing, because I know I liked the first Shazam movie. I saw the marketing for the second one and I was like, I don't know. And then I saw it mostly for the podcast. I would have been totally fine watching this on HBO Max.
Yep.
If it wasn't for the podcast, I would have seen it. And ironically enough, none of you else. It was all by myself, but whatever. I don't regret seeing this in theaters, but yeah, there's nothing about it that really screams like we have to go to the theater. It's a goofier story. It doesn't fit into the bigger DCEU, or maybe it probably won't. Definitely won't at this point, but
yeah, not
it
now.
Wasn't clear at this point. And I don't know. Like, I just don't know what could have saved it, because I think it's a solid movie.
Yeah, me too. Jammer, what letter grade did you give it last week, buddy?
I may have given it a B or B minus.
I don't think I was that high. I think I said a C+, because like you, I enjoyed it. I got a chance to watch it, and it was a fun afternoon at the movies. I was okay with it. But yeah, it is one of those films. Yeah, I'll watch everything and anything on the big screen because I have the time and the availability. But yeah, I would have been just as happy to watch this on the slightly smaller screen. So the marketing didn't help. I think Zachary Levi even said it. He said, you know, they were showing the trailers just before Scream 6 and things like that. So if you're trying to promote a family movie, that's not necessarily one of the best times to do it. I don't say that's the only piece of marketing mistake, but those kind of things certainly didn't help. I'm from the side point that people are just tired of these mediocre films now. And with the whole story of DC completely changing and it's a whole new story, is whatever happens with Flash and Flashpoint and things. I just think maybe people are a bit tired of them, generally speaking. So I think it's a combination of a lot of things, but I don't think the Rock thing has got anything to do with it. I'm with Jonesy on that. Yeah, that shit happens, but that certainly didn't affect this film. I don't think so.
Yeah, and so it's funny. and it goes hand in hand with an ego thing. It's interesting to me that Zachary Levi hasn't pointed a finger at himself, because there are people who won't see his movies or upset at him because of his own personal politics. One of the last things he did was he talked about Pfizer being a real danger to the world, because I think that he is what you would term an anti-vaxxer. And so stuff like that. Right. And so there are people who have the bandwidth who don't do podcasts who are like, you know what? I'm not going to go see that movie because of him. And so I'm not one of those, but there are people who really take that stuff to heart. Like if they feel a certain way about how someone believes, they carry that into whether or not they're going to see a movie. And it's, you know, I think in some ways that sucks. But unfortunately, that's kind of the polarized society in which we live. Letitia Wright got in trouble for the same thing. In the sequel to Black Panther. And so, you know,
that's another small thing that all these small things added up to a relatively disappointing thing. Because that one thing on its own wouldn't tank a movie. But when you've got all these things to play, it's a shame, because there's a lot more people involved in this movie other than Zachary Levi, right?
Yeah.
That get their livelihoods from it, and so making decisions like that will affect it, and it's a bit of a shame, but I do understand, and it is our right to go and watch a movie or not, spend money or not, right?
Yeah. I'll throw another one in here. I think this is kind of an interesting idea, and I'm curious. I think more people are going to see The Flash for Batman than they are to see this universe continue. It is interesting.
Absolutely.
To me. I have to wonder how much of what happened with this movie is the understanding that this is a universe on the decline. And so, you know, people who are into that kind of thing and seeing an interconnected universe and seeing all of these things, you know, they have to throw Wonder Woman in the marketing now to try and get people to see. It's like, well, why would I care about that when you're probably going to shit can Gal Gadot?
But how many people know that?
I don't know, but certainly we do. And we talk to people, some of us do, and you know, that probably
to be fair, whenever I talk to people, I try my best not to talk about movies. So yeah, because I know most people aren't as
he's got books to sell. Have you read my book? It's not talking about movies.
Well, most people aren't as interested in talking about movies, so I don't want to like have a conversation or, you know, force a conversation about a movie, so the person will be like, oh yeah, I saw Avatar, it was cool. Like, okay, well, if you're not into it, that's fine. We'll talk about something else. So there's just a lot of people who are like that. The majority of people who just don't care and who don't notice. As far as what percentage of people do or do not know about, you know, the state of the DCU, I don't know. We'll never know. But this movie's currently made $70 million worldwide.
Oh, Jesus.
Ouch.
Well,
not great.
It's got to be more than that.
No, it's not. I mean, 70.2, so.
I knew it. See, I knew you were lying, Jam.
Sorry, my bad. 70.2 million.
0.2 million is a lot of money for me.
I mean,
point two is a lot.
I would not turn it down. If someone says, you want 0.2 million, I'd be like, yeah.
We want to round down how much it made. Do you want to just make it an easy $70 million and give me the rest?
Let's make it an even $50 million. That's how much it made.
All right.
Cool. It down.
Does anybody have anything else to say about any of this? All done?
Nope. We're done.
All right. Shut it down.
Shut her down.
All right, folks. Well, thank you for listening. We appreciate it. Don't forget, LRM has other great stuff on the Genreverse Podcast Network, as well as LRM Online. You know where to find us, the lads. You can find us on Twitter. You can find us on TikTok. You can find us everywhere where social things happen. I don't know.
Not a Mastodon.
Anyway, not a Mastodon. What are they? Are they toots? Are they toots now?
No.
Did we decide?
They're status updates or whatever.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, folks. We will catch you on the next one. Hasta lasagna.
Don't get it on you.